Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And today we're in honor of a meme that was technically not a realm of truth. We're gonna bust out our Sonic shoes, our Sonic OCs. It's a different episode than we were expecting.
We're cracking open the Sonic OCs on this one.
Anyway, we're talking about...
Go grab my notebook.
Look up your name and then look up the hedgehog.
I have or the Dylan the Porcupine. Dylan the Porcupine was a vital. He was a vital member of the Freedom Fighters in the comics. Look it up.
Oh man.
Fought alongside Sally Acorn.
But truly what we are talking about is the custom or the idea of what is generally noted as homebrewing your own faction in 40K, specifically, obviously your own, like, for example, if it's a Space Marine, a chapter, an order for, a sister or a section of the Mechanicus or a Chaos War Band, the concept of bringing in your custom plans and ideas into your 40K experience. So unfortunately, this will not be our podcast where we break down Sonic X Shadow Generations.
It's always next time.
The kind of funny thing about this episode is it was kind of like, it seems a little bit, I think to a lot of people, this would seem kind of like an episode, it would almost seem like an unnecessary episode or concept to talk about, right? Because it's just, this is a hobby. You can paint your models whatever you want. We've talked about that idea, right? But the problem is, if you go online, right, and you start scrolling down, like if you search Warhammer 40K, miniature painting or whatever, right, and you start scrolling down, almost everything is going to be so many things, an overwhelming majority of the videos and the hits you'll get are going to be of like the base factions of the game, like the real ones. Like it will be Ultramarines, Blood Angels, the Order of Our Martyred Lady, just standard colored corn demons, Bad Moons. Orcs, orcs, at least if anything, are probably the ones that you can see, and I end up seeing or will see the most variation in personal utilization. But it's because I think a lot of it is it's orcs. I don't think as many people are honestly even familiar with a lot of the factions or the groups and whatever and armies of orcs. Most people, I think, just know there's Ghazghal, Thraka, and then, just varying colors. But that's the thing, right? So if you're new to the hobby, it's really easy to kind of almost, in a way, paint yourself into a corner where you only think of making your army, like, I'm going to make my army a Space Wolves army, or I'm going to make, my custodies perfect gold, and the gold and red and a combo, and like that's going to be it. And that's a big thing. It's like people, that's where people will default to, and it can, I say this because I speak from experience, like. When I started, I had started my sisters, and I started them as the Order of the Bloody Rose. And I always, debated and thought about, well, what if I did these colors? Oh, well, I don't know. Are people going to, think that, I can't run it with this? And this is less of a problem in 10th edition. This was a bigger problem in 9th, where it's like, oh, are people not going to think that, I can run this with certain rules, or that I can't say this is, you know, or works. I can't say it works like this army because it's in its own color and whatnot. But
certainly.
Yeah. And then, but then I watched or I saw videos of people who had made their own custom, you know, kind of, well, honestly, their homebrew chapters. If anything, we'll just call them. Yeah, well, I'll either call them chapters or sub-factions and stuff like that, because not every, obviously, it's not a perfectly ubiquitous term for, like, every army that's out there. But, yeah, like, you know, a lot of people, it's really easy to, like, think that you can't do that. But homebrewing a sub-faction is, in fact, quite a popular thing to do for a number of armies. You get plenty of people, yes, who are like diehard space mariners who, you know, are like, no, we like you have to like paint the real thing, you know, like, but poo on them. This is your army. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make, you know, Sonichu the Despoiler, then you can do so. Partly, if honestly, if you wanted to make a Sonic Chew the Despoiler, that'd be like a whole, that would like really go into like kit bashing. Especially with like, you could make like a Sonic Chew head and then like and 3D print it. And
then yeah, and just paint it the color you want, shape it into a medallion. Yep.
Yeah, and then put it on Abaddon to the Spoiler's body instead of like his normal head. But yeah, so I wanted to talk about that. And the there's... We'll kind of talk a little bit into multiple, like the kind of the two levels, right? Like we'll talk about just, you know, painting them, just worrying about painting them your own color. You know, what are some of the things to, you know, keep an eye on? What are, you know, obviously, what were some of the rule things that used to exist just in case they ever come back again in the future? You know, and but otherwise, just like what, you know, what are good things to look for when looking at, you know, choosing colors or, you know, custom colors. Despite that, you don't have not, and those aren't rules, those are just maybe things to think about for maybe those who are, mm-hmm. who don't really have an artistic background. To start off with, let's get into the kind of just baseline, like why, first of all, you know, why do your own custom army or why do your own custom colors? And obviously the number one answer to that is because it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, does that mean like you should come up with the, you know, a whole lore background and, you know, you need to like have an explanation into like why everything has its color and blah? No, no. When I'm making my Skaven, I was just like, I'm going to choose the color scheme that is based on my color scheme for my VTuber model. And that's it. That's all I was like. I was just like, I wanted to have a fun pink and light teal army.
Yeah.
And putting that on dirty rats was really funny to me. You know, I have no, there's no concept. There's no like, oh, well, this, the skitter pack of the blah, blah, blah. No, no, I got, there's nothing, none of that. And that's obviously like, that's the thing you can look at. But when you're picking your colors and in some respect, you know, obviously, or I don't know, I mean, obviously, I don't know what, you can speak to this as you kind of have the knowledge. But when you are picking a custom color scheme, there's at least a couple things to think about. And obviously, the first one is going to be, you know, what, like, first of all, like, from, if you're trying to pick through a color scheme, like, how annoying do you feel like, or, like, how difficult do you feel it is going to do be to paint this color scheme? A great example of this is trying to paint your army white. A very deceptively difficult color scheme to have for an army. And obviously, a lot of that is because white that will not hide any of your mistakes.
Absolutely. It's all going to be right there for everybody to see.
Because, I mean, because you've done a couple of Gunpla. Have you done, like, the standard Gundam where it is mostly white?
Yes. A lot of my models that I tend to purchase are just by coincidence of the particular models I end up being into is a lot of them are white. White is a very common color scheme in Gundam. A lot of the Federation Gundams are, you know, whites. A lot of your Federation-based models. You know, if you get into Zeon, that's where you get into all the cool, funky colors. White is very prevalent. Whites, blues, reds, and yellows, all of which are really sharp and really stand out. So, you know, if you're doing any kind of, like, accent work on them or any coloring, any imperfections or mistakes you make could kind of stand out pretty easily as well.
Right, and especially, like, with Gundam utilizing paneling, much like a Tau would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even, because that's somewhat true even for Fire Warriors, because they have a very flat style armor, even on the infantry. That even almost exacerbates that factor, because, like, you know, if you look at, you know, if you look, like, at a Drukhari model, and, like, if it's white, and but, like, under the, you know, there's, like, a little dot under, like, a bunch of spiky bits, someone might not notice that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got, like, a big white dot on your Riptide suit, there's no hiding it. So like, that's a big thing, is there sometimes the color you choose, like, might, like, it, on, like, I mean, and depending on, like, what your realm of painting skill is or and comfortability, right, you may be at the point where you're kind of just like, I don't know, like, and that shouldn't always stop you, but that's, like, a thing to think about is, like, if you're concerned that, like, okay, white is deceptively difficult, right? What are your best things that you can do to try to help mitigate that? And obviously, in a grimdark game mode, like, or game like 40K is, the benefit you do have is washes. You know, finding some type of, like, Agrax earth shade or a similar, like, or Nuln Oil in similar black, you know, shade, like, is the benefit in that, like, you can utilize stuff like that to try and essentially give it a big wash down, and then it's not so, like, perfectly white. Similarly, mm-hmm. It's also choosing off whites, so things that are maybe, like, more of a, like, of a bone or an ivory, like, a little bit grayer, or, like, a very, or, like, a super, like, desaturated light gray. Sometimes that can help you out, because, like, from a bit away, it will seem more white, but you can at least, like, it'll be a little bit easy to, like, try to maybe mitigate with some things or paint over. That's a big thing, is more like, if you make a mistake, then you can kind of, if it has a little bit extra of the kind of darker pigment, it's a little bit easier to get it over whatever mistake you made after that mistake dries. And fix it up. So just learning some of that stuff. Like, you know, there's not a lot of white armies in 40K. And there's kind of, I think, a reason for it. You know, like, the main ones I can think of off the top of my head are Tau, White Scars, and the Order of the... Why has it escaped me? Order of the Sacred Rose. Jeez. Okay. But otherwise, like, the other thing then to think about is, obviously, like, if you are putting in, obviously, we're going to need multiple colors, because, you know, if we could live in a world where we just, like, primed our minis a single color and then called it a day, like, I'm sure there are a number of people out there who see that there are red primers and they're like, I want to play Blood Angels. oh, there's a Mephiston red primer. Oh boy, let me just paint my whole army.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some temptation in that. And outside of the obvious part of there's details in that, like there are guns and there are potentially basing stuff and there are eyes that need that coloring too. If you're like creating a custom army, the greatest benefit you get is make your accents and your highlights, like your trim and the all those secondary colors. Those almost are the most important part because that's what creates your defining feature, right?
Yes.
A great influence on my sister's army was my kind of thought was I really liked the color scheme of Emperor's Children, Loyalist Emperor's Children, because current Emperor's Children is, depending on how you see them, a lot more like pure pink. But Loyalist Emperor's Children was this pink, purple, and gold. And I really liked the color scheme, and I wanted my sisters to be that. And you know, and that's the thing, right? The gold, the gilded part of it is really what makes it, like, sit there. There's obviously, like, the main color is inherently unique, but the fact that it matches so well, because it's this very royal scheme, the gold really matters. And then in my Exodites, one of the big accent colors I'm utilizing, because the main armor and whatnot will all be this dark jade, is I'm making the accent color either like kind of this mostly orange, but maybe this kind of reddish orange. And yeah, obviously that somewhat fits in this kind of like almost like huntery scheme. But the other reason is that I want it to have, you know, because yeah, they're Exodites, they're technically like, you know, jungle Eldar, but they're also Eldar. They don't need to feel like they need to be like ultra sneaky and whatnot. Because even though they're Exodites, if they'll use stealth equipment still. Like, they're not completely devoid of technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even if it was just a normal Eldar, then they're not going to be. They're going to use cloaks if they want to, like, you know, going to use cloaking tech if they want to. So they don't. The benefit is that you don't have to worry about like real camo in 40K. You can, yeah, if no, you want to. You can do a camo scheme. I mean, that's the Raptors of the Space Marines, if you like, for a good example.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, despite that, like, I wanted Dark Jade to feel like a very, like, you know, kind of huntery feel to the actual armor. I like the orange because it sticks out, and a lot of, you know, the dinosaur like parts for the actual, like, you know, special Exodite models that I've printed, you know, their scales would be kind. I mean, I'll probably play around with different colors of dinosaur scales and stuff, but like the one I have right now is like I have a set of red scales because it works well with the orange on the cloak, you know. Learning some of that stuff is very helpful, and it like will make your army feel interesting and impressive, and it will give you, and that's the thing that like will help. Well, it's like the nice part about doing a custom army, right? It's to do something that somebody can see it and kind of be like, oh wow, that's cool, it's really unique. I'm not saying obviously we do this for the gratification of others, but like it's a nice aspect to have where it's just like,
yeah, of course,
you know, you don't have to think someone's going to look at it and be like, so you just tried to make the Cran Marines, right?
Listen, who here hasn't painted their minis to look like the thing they love eating the most? You know, I saw plenty of McDonald's variants when Armored Core 6 was out and everybody was figuring out custom paint jobs for their mix, you know. Plenty of McDonald's, plenty of Burger King, all that jazz. So.
Well, and they were, and that made its way into Space Marine 2.
Sometimes you paint what you eat. As long as you don't eat the paint, you're fine.
Yeah, don't drink the paint water.
Don't drink the paint water or the paint for that matter. Or the thinner. Just because it's thinner doesn't mean it's like somehow less toxic. It's still
bad. In fact, it might be more.
It could arguably be more. If the science is correct, it could be even more harmful.
You know, and so then there's kind of the one thing that will trip up people in making their own custom army. And technically, there's kind of two answers to this. And so one, and that is epic heroes, right? So, you know, for example, for sisters, you know, you've got a Saint Celestine. For Space Marines, you've got Rubute Gilliman. You know, the Eldar just released all of these new, you know, Phoenix Lords. And honestly, even the Aspect Warriors themselves, you know, it feels like that they need to have like their normal color scheme a lot of the time, right? Because they're these special named units that, you know, they're not befit to specific, like, for example, with the Phoenix or with the Aspect Warriors, you know, those aren't befit to a specific craft world, right? You know, the in lore, all Dire Avengers look like Dire Avengers. They don't, you sure. know, they don't look like, you know, they don't look like the they're not equivalent to the craft world that they're on. And, you know, an Asserman, you know, is always in that blue armor with the yin yang and the red helmet. But this is that reminder to you that you can say patooey to such things. You can paint your epic heroes whatever you want. And granted, if you do feel like you really want to stick with the concept that this is an epic hero who is coming to help your created, you know, faction, sub-faction and paint scheme, then the benefit with 10th is a lot of times it is actually really easy to get away with putting an epic hero, painting them their normal selves, and then coming in and having them next to your army. Because realistically, that doesn't mean though that they have to be painted the same color. But if you want to, you absolutely can. A great example is I have a Junith Uretra. I never know. I still don't know how to pronounce this stinking name. Until she shows up in an audiobook somewhere, I'll never know.
Right.
But I, you know, she's a epic hero character for the Order of Arm Ordered Lady. But I don't know, I was just like, screw that. I'm going to paint her I want. And so I completely shifted her paint. I painted her in my army style. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't change that she is that character, right? She doesn't change that she's that data sheet. The fact that she's riding on this giant ass pulpit is a testament to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then before we get into the actual main homebrew thing, I do want to make the note, like, this is like a very clear thing, and I'll talk a lot more about this when we do a 3D printer episode in the near future. But the guard are a great example of this, because the guard are the thing that gets very forgotten, because whenever you see them in books and lore and stuff, they almost always are Cadians, right? Cadians are everywhere. And right now, especially, you know, now that the Krieg box got announced, you know, pretty much the two main forms of guardsmen that you see are Krieg and Cadians. But there are thousands of types of guardsmen, right? You know, they're like, you know, the Attilan Rough Riders, they come from an Attilan Imperial Guard. You know, you have the Mordians, you have the Catachin jungle fighters, but those are all, while those like partly come from units and stuff, well, not the Mordians, but like the Rough Riders and the jungle fighters, they stem from a whole planet of guardsmen that are like that. And guardsmen technically have the capacity to be the most unique and allow, and that is a, an army that is meant to be different planet to planet. Because the real way that most guard work, and now granted, like I said, every planet will ship out. That's why you see Cadians everywhere, right? Because Cadia just like shoveled, or like, you know, just like, it's like it took a, it's like as if you took a bucket steam of water and chucked it out the window. They essentially did that with guardsmen, where they would just take a huge right. bucket load of guardsmen and just chuck them out into the universe. So like, that's why they were everywhere. But there are hundreds of planets that their tithe is guardsmen. And they're not named Cadia. So that's a big thing, is guard. If you like, there are so many factions, especially outside of Space Marines, but even Space Marines in general, because there's supposed to be almost like a incountable number of, you know, of chapters of Space Marines. The game, it's really easy with the lore to do that. But like, so many, especially guardsmen, are like so, like in lore gives so much benefit to doing something homebrewy and personal. All right, so let's talk about then though, you want to make some lore for your custom army, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things you should think about? Because, you know, when you think of homebrew, right, many people who come from D&D will think about kind of like, you know, making these, you know, making a whole homebrew campaign, so a whole world, you know, different OCs, unique items, gods, whatnot. Obviously, that's not really something that necessarily, you can't get as deep or as wide, I shouldn't say. You can get deep, you can't get as wide in 40K because you're conceptually working inside a framework that exists and it's very defined, right? Because D&D, while it has its own universe, it does not require you to stay in it to still be a D&D. But to be 40K, you must be in 40K.
Yeah, certainly.
So, you know, but because this is a game where we're buying toys and have the power to paint them, you know, we get to look at it and say, you know, kind of, hey, I'm going to branch off. So kind of as I denoted with, we'll say with my example, with the my sisters, right? I'm going to branch off. I'm going to take, because there are Ordos Minoris. So, you know, I will take what I love about the Order of the Bloody Rose. And let's look into, let's create an Order Minoris, right? Let's, you know, think of the color scheme. So, you know, I kind of had the thought of like, you know, your Emperor's Children-y kind of color. So what's a fun name I can go with? Okay, I'll call it the Order of the Gilded Orchid, because it is this kind of light purpley pink color, very orchid-y. Utilize that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now where can I go from here? Well, like, you know, now it's up to you to start thinking into, okay, well, so how, you know, where did this come from? And obviously this is stuff where it's just, you know, you're spitballing now, right? Like, where did they come from? When were they, you know, how long has it been around? You know, what are some of the things that they specialize in, right? What do they, because like, if, for example, if you think about it, like so many sub-factions specialize in something, right? Order of our Bloody Rose, Order of the Bloody Rose, I combined our Martyred Lady and Bloody Rose, Bloody Rose specializes in melee combat. You know, white yeah. scars love to be on vehicles. You know, there are so many specific things that you can think into, right? You can press into that with, you know, what do you want your army to really focus on, and then make that part of your lore, your homebrew. You know, and so that's the thing though, is one of the things you have to be careful of is creating a balance between the established lore and what you want to make up, right? Because, you know, for example, you can't just be like, oh, my Space Marine chapter really loves to or is like really okay with collecting Xenos artifacts, right? And you know, some people may think that because they'll see the Blood Ravens, who are known for stealing important items of the Imperium, and just for some reason having them, which that they're a whole. I want to talk about them at some point because they technically are canon now and they're very funny, but and cool, but funny too. But yeah, so the, you know, like you might be inspired by that and be like, yeah, so they take a bunch of Xenos tech, and that's like a whole thing where it's like, okay, but let's think about this. You're not the Death Watch, and we'll talk about that when we can talk about the Death Watch soon. You're not the Death Watch. The Inquisition's probably going to have a problem with this. You know, how are you dealing with that? You know, and that's not necessarily to say, you know, do you want, you know, that you can't have a captain that maybe has like a Necron staff or something, right? But it's just like, you got to come up with a pretty damn good reason that he has that staff, right? And that, you know, the Ordo Xenos isn't knocking down on his door.
Being yeah, like, certainly.
Give me that staff. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, especially if you're just starting, don't, maybe don't start there, right? You know, so for example, with the Gilded Orchid, my whole concept is just they kind of, it, the this only semi-heretical aspect, right, was they, you know, they seek a somewhat similar, they kind of find almost a relative, like, inspiration, kind of unbeknownst to them. From the concepts that Fulgrim had with war. So trying to seek a good amount of perfection, but then also wanting to be very fast and kind of be very melee and duelist-y, right? So my whole thing is that they, outside of their paint scheme, I try to use as a good amount of melee attacking. Otherwise, my big thing is I want them to move quickly. I use faster units, and then when I use, you know, bigger, like specifically like high powered weaponry, because it's the concept of nothing can truly end up living if it doesn't exist anymore in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of nuke tactic, if you will. It's just thinking of things like that. So, like, you know, the two favorite things of my army is either melee attacks or Melta, right? That's my two. That's the two things that I focus on. And that's, like, their specialty. And that's an easy identity to hit, right? Because it's just...
Would you recommend, as far as, like, kind of, like, a ratio or, like, you know, kind of looking at it like pieces of a pie, like, do you think the best kind of takeaway for somebody that's starting to like homebrew out something like that is to say stick with like two primary features or aspects of that army that they want to kind of focus on?
Yeah, because here's the thing. I mean, one way or another, you may feel if you, for example, if you wanted to make a very salamandery type army, right? That was like very flamer.
Mm-hmm.
But your army has nothing good for flamers, right? So a good example of this is Sisters. Prior to their codex, when they had the index, like flamers felt bad to play, to be honest. They just felt awful. And okay, you know, like that was a huge bummer. So like I was like, okay, well, I'll find, you know, maybe I'll shift and just kind of play something else for a minute, right? You know, and that's the thing. Like, you can always do that. But, yes, like, I would say, like, you know, when you're thinking, though, of at least your, like, faction identity, right? You can be like, all right, normally, right, my faction really loves to utilize flamers, right? But, you know, they love utilizing flamers and Yeah, we'll say flamers and plasma, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're a shooty army, and it's like we're going to be using a lot of plasma weaponry and flamer weaponry. So it's like high powered and no and you know, for sure hitting, right? And
are you thinking of it in terms of like 50-50, or more so that like one is sort of the primary?
No, because you'll weapon always of choice need,
and then the other's the secondary.
Right, exactly. Because like you'll always need the other pieces of the pie, right? You can't mm-hmm. not have melee. You can't not have bolt guns or like standard fire, right? You right. can't not have something that has like maybe a little bit of melta or like a rocket, right? You need something in the army, because otherwise then it's just completely imbalanced and it's you'll get frustrated as a gamer, and then from a narrative aspect, they're going to be so one-sided, they would technically be like kind of easy to take advantage of. So you're going to need all pieces of the pie. But yes, I would definitely say, like, yeah, it's like pick two that are going to be the biggest pieces of the pie, like by far the biggest, you know, and then like one with a primary, one with a secondary, and then just kind of everything else, just to at least in places where they will fit and kind of shore up, you know, the weaknesses, right? Just to cover your bases. You know, so if you need like a couple of melee units just to, you know, to hold people forward so that you can utilize, you know, for example, if you were trying to have like a very long range kind of snipery artillery kind of army, you know, you need like you're going to need then at least, even if like those snipers and artillery are your main focus, you're going to need some things to keep everybody ahead so that you can mm-hmm. stay back and shoot.
Yeah, because even the Tau, like, you know, the Tau, they're very firearms heavy, attacking from a distance. But even that army still has specific units that are more meant to act as kind of like the front lines. You know?
Yeah, and you know, they get put in big mech suits, but that's the point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that right. mech suit is protective.
It's ensuring that you have more than one tool there, and that you're able to cover all aspects of the field and not just one part of it.
Right. So, you know, you can focus on certain aspects of an army, and they don't even have to technically even always be weapon based, right?
Mm-hmm.
For example, with Tau. You can have a very mech suit based army where it's just like, I'm gonna have so many mechs
rubbing my hands together.
Yeah, you know, you won't even believe it, you know, and it's just like so this is a cadre that is just very specialized to the mech suits, right? And you know, crisis suits, you know, bigger, like Riptides, everything else, right? You know, like everything. We're going to focus heavily on that. We're going to really sink in on that. You know, or with like Space Marines, or we'll say Chaos Space Marines. Say you have a Chaos Space Marines army and you're like, I really want Terminators, Obliterators, you know, the Hell Brutes. I want like the beefy boys.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that, and absolutely, like, you, that can be your specialty, and that's where you focus on, you know. And obviously these are all things that can affect your gameplay, and so obviously, you know, some of it obviously does need to come to you thinking about how you want to play said army, right? But nothing says you can't shift that stuff around. But if you want to make a lore behind it, you do have to somewhat think of the why, right? So like, because for example, say with a Chaos Space Marine army, Terminators for Space Marines are already rare. Terminators for Chaos Space Marines are even rarer. And because they don't get to necessarily just easily try to recover the suit and put someone back in it, right? They have to really hope they can find that suit and then maybe find somebody that can get put in it. But So, like, you got to think about, like, so if you're running a Chaos Warband that has a lot of Terminators, why do they have a lot of Terminators? You know, do they have a lot of descendants from the Iron Warriors? So they have a lot of good, they have warsmiths who can make sure that that army get that armor gets put back together. And, like, or, and, you know, do they take a, you know, kind of like a mental stance, right? Of like, hey, shit's going bad. We got to book it. You know, this, that doesn't have to affect your gameplay, right? But if you want to have this like mental lore, and if you want to tell stories, especially like if you want to use this for a narrative campaign, right? Because that is one of the, I think, underrated ways of playing 40K is narratively. You know, your DM needs to know that. Because, yeah, or your GM needs to know that because they will then maybe plan how, maybe how you'll fight. So like, say for example, you do a standard 2000 point battle, and then because you guys, even though, you know, so you were losing, and no matter how the board state ended up, you know, your GM knows, hey, you guys are skittery warband. So like, I know that you guys likely have gone, had to go back and get stuff. So I'm going to have your next thing. You're going to do a 500 point fight against someone, you know, Jimbo's AdMech army, because they came to scavenge your stuff too, or whatever, right? Whatever the story you have, like they came there to make sure your stuff gets destroyed or your stuff is scavenged or whatever. And you now need to fight over your stuff,
mm-hmm.
but in a smaller scale. So like knowing that stuff can be useful in those settings, right? Especially like, cause that's where that can really like having that type of detail, even though that's not going to always specifically matter to your army, right? If they, you know, if they're tech hoarders, it's not going to matter as much to your army list building, but it will affect maybe how you tell the story of your games and the battles that you do with said army. And that is, though, the truth, though, is that like when you're doing a homebrewed faction lore, again, like kind of outside of just essentially like posting your Sonic OC to, you know, your Warhammer OC to a Discord or Reddit or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, other than that, most of the time you're practically using it is in like a narrative campaign setting, right? So that is kind of the thing of just like, don't always worry about the home, like, or like the lore aspects of why you're painting things a certain way or choosing stuff. But it's a fun thing to think about when you're doing it, especially maybe if you do have plans to play something narrative in the future, right? And there's a greater number of things and do's and don'ts to look at with, you know, homebrew, right? Obviously, you know, the try not to cross paths, or like, don't be like, yeah, we're a loyalist sect of Emperor's children, you know, like, don't, like that ain't gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there are some that feel kind of obvious, but there are so many other things to think about with like building a 40K faction, and that is even maybe a larger topic on itself. But like, I more wanted to bring. I didn't want to go through like all of the maybe tips and tricks on creating like specifically just homebrew, but like why I don't want you to be afraid to paint your models however you want.
Sure.
But other than that, that's pretty much all I've got for, you know, why to paint your army the way that you want. If you had a towel, I mean, do you have an idea of how you would paint it?
I have. I don't know if this is a hypothetical for the audience.
No, it's for you.
Definitely. Okay. I have definitely thought about it. When I am deciding colors, in most, this is something unique for sure with Warhammer 40K, is that the entire aspect of even thinking about, quote unquote lore accuracy and, like, you know, keeping in mind, like, what are the, are there colors that are, like, very strongly associated with certain models? Usually when I go about any sort of, like, painting or model painting, first and foremost thing I'm thinking about, honestly, is just what are colors that I really like, you know? And I do strongly look at warm colors and cool colors. Mm-hmm. Every one of us who has touched a video game in the past 10 years is aware of the blue and orange color scheme, because it is, you're taking a very warm color orange and you are setting it next to blue, which, I mean, there's a variety of blues, but usually it's like a much cooler, darker blue. And it provides that great sense of contrast that makes things, like, really stand out, makes them really pop. And it does so in a way that's slightly different from, like, the more traditional red and blue, that, you know, is maybe more familiar. Nowadays, obviously, we're more used to that, so orange and blue doesn't seem as exciting. I'm a big yellow and blue guy. Really like yellow and blue. Yellow in general, this could be a hot take, is that I feel like yellow is vastly underutilized in a lot of model painting, whether it is, you know, tabletop gaming, you know, it could be Dungeons and Dragons, it could be Warhammer, or it could even be, you know, larger model kits, things like that. I feel like yellow does not quite get its due. It's a color that's very easy to get wrong. A lot of times people try to get, like, a really bright, vibrant yellow and they end up with a mustard yellow that's a little darker. Doesn't, light doesn't bounce off of it really well, and the results end up looking kind of eh. So people tend to kind of shy away from that. But I love, if I can get, like, the right contrast of a really bright yellow and then pair that with, like, a cooler blue, I love that color scheme. I'm all about that. So, like, for the Tau units, if I could, if I had the means to do so, and no one was stopping me, there would definitely be at least some point where I would just be painting as many of the units as possible in a blue and yellow two-tone scheme.
I was going to say, I think you would be a really big fan of Craftworld Ayandan.
Yeah. Yes.
They are.
There it is. There it is right there.
Very yellow and blue. There is a Lytok, which is the flip side of that. So it's yellow accent, blue main. But
yeah. And I was going to say, and what you're seeing here, so that's, because I think there's a tendency to be like, all right, blue is the primary, yellow is your secondary or your accent. Mm-hmm. And that is, you'll, with a lot of, like, what I do, like when I was doing Armored Core 6, it was like a 60-40 situation. And I personally tend to go for more blue, yes, less yellow. So I like seeing this here because it's a great example of how you can flip the script on that and still have it look really good. I really, using the blue for the shoulders, using it for the top of the headpiece. It's great because you're not losing the overall figure of the unit. You can still clearly see, like, where the arms and the legs are defined because of the shoulders being used. So it's still visible in that way, but it's also using a lot more of that core yellow color instead of, using the blue as the primary.
Right. Yeah. And that's,
I like this a lot.
don't be afraid to make your own, you know, to find and make your own warband, and hell, make them come from any infinitesimal number of sub factions, and hell, make your own loyalist space marine sub faction that fell to chaos, right? Because for you, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing to there's nothing, you're not selling a product, right? So you don't have to worry about if this is going to stick with people, right? But if you want to take it further and you want to write stories and you want to kind of, because some people use homebrewing as their test, kind of almost like their test grounds to know, learning and being able to write their own literature. Because this is a hobby that's obviously very beneficial to that. And if you want to do that, then that is something you will want to think of, right? So if you decide to take your homebrewing to the next level, right, and kind of almost go full fan fiction on it, it has a bad connotation, I know. We meme here. if you wish to do that, though, that's the thing, right? Like, that's then you, the extra part you're going to have to think of is, okay, well, how will, you know, how can I get people to latch on to this extraneous, you know, loyalist chapter that fell to chaos, right? What are good ways that you could utilize that and do stuff? Like, you know, I think a great example was the Soul Drinkers, who were a loyalist, and while they technically fell to chaos, they didn't think they did. As far as they knew, they were loyalists still.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole thing. But, you know, stuff like that. Like, that's stuff that, like, people can kind of latch to and, like, find. I'm not saying just steal that idea, because you don't, you then everybody will call you out for stealing Soul Drinker's lore. But, like, you know, find stuff like that. Find ways that you can make it unique and make it interesting, rather than just, like, you know, oh, well, you know, then they sold themselves to Khorne because, you know, the Inquisition was bad and they were mean, and Khorne was there and he was like, hey, bro, I'll help you out. You know, give it something. But that's it. That's all I got. Paint them armies how you want. Have fun. These are silly plastic toys that we will spend way too much money on. Even if you get the 3D printer, you'll still have spent way too much money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'll do it. Unless you got any final notes to make here.
I don't think so, no.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all next week. We'll go back to some lore. Likely, maybe something that just got a new index again for the second time this edition. yeah, so we'll talk
some
about
of the
that.
Some of the Emperor's children are more favored than others,
specifically by GW.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a scenario though where it's not getting a second one for a good reason. But it has it now, and it's probably better that it does. But it's not a good reason that we're here. We'll talk about that, though, next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll see you then. Have a good one.
Goodbye.